Cool. Thank you. It's glad to be here. Interesting being recorded. That adds a little extra pressure. I thought that was pretty cool that we read those first two paragraphs of more about alcoholism. In the meetings I normally go to, that's not part of the normal canon, but it was really interesting and good to hear some of that stuff again. So I appreciated that. I think what I want to talk about, we usually do what happened, what it's like now. I think I'm going to start at the end with what it's kind of like now. And I want to talk about happy, joyous, and free. And being happy, joyous, and free. And my experience in recent times of joy for no reason. I think probably a lot of you know what I'm talking about, which is in my previous incarnation of myself, I was driven by external circumstances. So something would happen that would make me happy, I would be happy. Something would happen that would make me sad, I would be sad. And I was constantly driven by external forces and what was happening around me. And I've been going through the realization of that I don't have to live like that. It's sort of like being a boat on the ocean, and if a storm comes up, I'm at the mercy of the storm. Or if it's calm and peaceful and I'm happy and calm and peaceful, then really I can be at peace and in serenity within myself, and I can pull that out from within myself, and it doesn't, and then external circumstances are just something to be observed and dealt with. But I'm able to observe and deal with these things from a place of joy and happy, joyous freedom, which is amazing and awesome. And that didn't just happen, that's something it's partly been a wonderful surprise of my sobriety. I thought I would come to meetings when I was brand new, and I would hear somebody say, well, I'm a grateful alcoholic. And I would go, you're such an asshole. And I would just, I didn't believe them. Because I was thinking, this is the only way that I have to live. I cannot live in the way that I was living. I have to give up the stuff that I wanted to have to make my life livable. And now I just have to live this dull, gray, grim, life of self-denial. And this journey for me has been a wonderful discovery of being able to find the freedom to live the life I want to live. I guess I should take a moment and give some background here. My sobriety date is February 9th, 2017. So I have just short of 3.5 years sober. And I guess I'll talk a little bit about my background of how I got here. I was a daily drinker for approximately 20 years. And the first 10 of those years were not bad, but the last 10 were pretty miserable. I mean, going down to bad to worse to worse to worse till it was just intolerable. I hit a low point where I finally admitted that I had a real problem and I needed help, and I went to a rehab. I went to this rehab thinking that it was just an escape. It was a way to get away from all of my problems for a little while. And so if I don't, I can't drink, then that's probably a good thing for a little while. And I spent a little bit short of 2 months in that rehab. Got all clean, thought I was all good, all better. Left that place, came home, promised everybody, yeah, I'm going to do meetings. It was a sort of a program agnostic we had. They said, well, you can do AA, you can do this other program. And everybody said, well, you know, we can't do, nobody wants to do AA. We don't want to deal with the God thing. And so I was kind of listening to that kind of trend. And so I was like, I don't think I'm going to do AA. And so I tried one of the other programs. I think I went to one meeting. And then I went, yeah, that was pretty good. I'll go back again. But then it was inconvenient, and then I didn't go again. And then I decided I didn't really need to do meetings or anything. And everything was just, I was cruising along. Everything was good. I was back from the rehab. I still had my job. Wife and family were all happy, and I was sober. And my mind was clear. I felt all good. About 2 months later, I had about 3 months of sobriety, and I thought to myself, life is pretty good right now, and I've really got stuff under control. I'm really managing things pretty well. And there was a night when my wife and my kids all went out. I had the house to myself, just me and the cats, and I thought, I should do something special tonight. Everything is so good. I'm going to take a walk. So I took a walk, and the stars were out, and it was warm, and it was a beautiful evening, and I thought, I'm going to get a drink. I'm just going to walk by the liquor store, and I'll just get just a little half pint, and I'll drink that tonight, and then I'll be done with that, and that'll just be tonight. And I was drinking that, and it was wonderful. The stars got even more beautiful, and everything was awesome. And I started thinking to myself, I could do this once every 3 months. It's been 3 months since my last drink. I could do this again in 3 months. Yeah, I got a program. I got a plan here. I'll do this again in 3 more months. And I, enjoyed that evening. Went to bed, slept well. Got up the next morning. And that next morning, 3 months seemed like an awfully long time away. Seemed like a long time to wait to have that experience again. So I thought, well, I'll start the 3 months tomorrow, and I'll drink again today, which I did. Within a week, I was drinking before work in the mornings. Within 4 weeks, I was drinking literally around the clock. I think that's the time when I was so distressed that I got up at 5 a.m. wondering what time the liquor store actually opened, and decided to go find out. And to my joy, the liquor store was open, and I walked in there shaking like a leaf, and just in that horrible place, and walked in, and I asked the cashier for the bottle behind the counter, and he said, I can't sell it to you until 6. And I was crushed, and I went back out, and I thought to myself, what am I going to do? And then I drove my car around for 20 minutes, came back at 6 o'clock on the dot, bought my bottle, left. And as I was walking back to my car, I thought to myself, this is the lowest point I've ever been. This is just the lowest I've ever been. But then I drank, and it was all okay. 2 weeks after that, I was in another rehab. I was back in another rehab. And then in the second rehab, they ran a true AA program, and I started reading the Big Book. And it was somewhere in the middle of reading to the agnostics, where something clicked inside me, and I thought to myself, this could work. And something just kept saying, follow this direction. And I kept following that direction, and I've been following it since. And my life has just gotten better and better and better and better, to the point where now I am truly living a life of joy and freedom. And according to my little timer, that's about 10 minutes. So thank you very much. It's been an honor to come and serve you.
Thank you. Hi, everybody in North Oakland. My name is Anne. I'm an alcoholic. Hi. My sobriety date is September 17th, 1995. My home group is the Saturday 6 p.m. women's meeting here in Inverness, California. I live kind of in between Point Reyes Station and Inverness, California, so out in West Marin. And I just want to thank you for inviting me to share at your meeting. welcome, especially to Rebecca and Jolene. I know I lost track of how many visitors we have, but I think that's really great. Just keep coming back, you know, just be a sponge. I'm going to tell you a little bit about what it was like for me, what happened and what I'm like now. The like now part is really great, but I need to start back at the beginning and just tell you that I think long before I had a drinking problem, I had a thinking problem. And I can identify that, as I'm sure a lot of you can as well. I don't remember a lot about, you know, I was come from a relatively small family, just one younger sister. We grew up in the suburbs of Detroit, Michigan. Two incredibly decent parents, however, they, you know, couldn't stay together. So around 9 years of age, you know, the family started to break apart. And I just kind of started to feel like, you know, the end of a hem that just was starting to unravel a little bit. And I got, you know, I got hanging out with some older kids, started smoking cigarettes, started drinking alcohol. My first drink was a slow gin fizz. I mean, today, I wouldn't drink that today, but it was horrifying. It was a really horrifying concoction. And we drank whatever, you know, little kids could get a hold of, usually from somebody's, behind somebody's bar, or you try to get somebody to, you know, buy you something that doesn't taste horrible. Because to me, alcohol actually did not taste good. But I wanted how it made me feel really fast. You know, I used to, that was one of my, kind of my hallmarks was binge drinking, and but just drinking really quickly because I really wanted what the effect alcohol had on me. I was a shy kid. I was the oldest of two, hyper responsible, pretty perfectionistic, and I had this crazy, you know, out overt sister who's 11 months and 3 weeks younger than I am, and we are the most different people in the whole wide world, but we're the same age every year for a week. So she got into this program about 6 years ahead of me, but that's her story. But she was a big part of mine, so I'll just share that with you. That you know, she was doing her, she was wrecking the cars, you know, getting fired from the jobs, you know, waking up with people that, you know, she didn't know who they were, and calling me while I was still kind of had myself together. I was doing a lot of my drinking in secret. I was losing control pretty early on, driving drunk. I don't know how many times I've done that. I've had two reckless DUIs, two reckless operations that should have been DUIs. And I can tell you, I should have had a lot more than that. I endangered not only myself, but a lot of other people with my drinking as a youth. I think, you know, most kids experiment, you know, we're not moderate drinkers by any means. I just was, there was something about the feeling that I had when I drank alcohol. I felt more whole. I felt relaxed and calm. I felt like I could talk to people. I could play pool. I could dance. I could, you know, talk to boys, whatever. It's all those kinds of things. To me, alcohol was magical. And what I also had was, you know, I was watching my mom. Now, I'm not blaming her, but I was watching her react to the divorce that she had with my dad. And then she married, I think, the man of her dreams, who then, within a couple of years of their divorce, he passed away from colon cancer. And she just couldn't handle it. She gave up on God. She gave up on man. And she drank herself, you know, in bed every night. I would sit at the end of her bed while she was drinking and just raging at God and raging at the world. You know, how could this be? How could this happen? And that was, it's kind of like, oh, okay. So you drink and you take some pills and you're a victim and, you know, you blame. And that's like, I just kind of picked up these habits. It just seemed a lot easier because I wasn't seeing like a role modeling of, you know, how to handle things, like maybe go to a therapist or talk about, hey, you know, all relationships don't last, that type of thing. I came to understand and be able to look back on all of that later on as I got older and as I was longer in sobriety. I could really appreciate what a terrifying thing my mom had to go through trying to raise two kids on her own in the 70s. You know, that was not a good time for a divorced woman. And then to be with a man who very quickly, you know, a lot of drama with, you know, kind of wrecking two families in a situation like that. So I became someone who, it was very important to me to be self-reliant. And so God, I wasn't going to be looking for any spiritual help. I wasn't going to be looking for any friends to help me out. You know, it was, what do I have to do to survive? And I pretty much walked out the door with my fists up. You know, I was terrified. And in that fear, my character defects just ran rampant. I was trying to constantly cover up for what I considered were all these, you know, kind of deficiencies. There was a lot of chatter in here. Still can be sometimes, that I do recognize that that's old. That's really old behavior, is to criticize myself, you know, for what I was doing or not doing things right. Or my mom used to say to me all the time, you know, you should know better. And it never occurred to me to say, how would I know better? I just walked away going, yeah, I should know better. I must have missed that manual or missed that class where everybody else learned that thing of how you get along in this world. And so I started, alcohol was very depressing to my system. And I became, you know, pretty morbidly depressed and suicidal on a number of occasions. Not, you know, I obviously I'm still here. But what would happen is I would drink and I would get really depressed. I would go through a period of time where I was kind of happy, could be at the party and all, but then I'd always go over the edge, you know, and it was usually blackout drinking, horribly embarrassed to find out the next day what I had done, what I had said, how I behaved, which just, you know, just doubles the shame as you're going along. So that's probably, you know, probably pretty enough of the majority of you, I'm sure, can identify with. You know, it's not a standout story in any way, shape, or form, but I kept trying different things. When I started getting in trouble with alcohol and like the law, wrecking cars, I was court ordered to Alcoholics Anonymous when I was 25 years old. And if you do the math on my sobriety day, I didn't get sober until I was 35. So I was doing a lot more wreckage in between. You know, I got the message. You were all there in Columbus, Ohio, which is where I was at the time. I was court ordered to the rooms and people were saying, you know, get a book, get a sponsor, work the steps, come to meetings, you know, keep coming back. And I was just resentful. I was in denial and I wasn't having it. I was just going to get my court card signed until I could get out of this thing, because at that time alcohol was not my problem. I was probably the emotional, you know, at 25 even, I was probably about 14 years of age emotionally. So I didn't connect the dots. I didn't really want to connect the dots. I wanted it all to be that I must not be in the right time, in the right place, from the right people, doing the right thing. So let me go figure out how to make this better. And I'm going to do it myself. I'm going to take care of myself. I don't need anybody. You know, just compounded the problem, you know, very lonely, turned my back on my family, you know, said to myself, I don't need a dad. You know, my mom got married two more times after my dad, but, you know, I just wasn't going to have it. And I was off, you know, trying to make my way in the world and just burning it to the ground left and right. I had, you know, pretty erratic behavior. I could keep the outside stuff looking pretty good long enough that, you know, and then I would kind of explode just about every 5 years, starting at the age of 25. I started working on an advanced degree after I finished college, and it just snowballed. You know, I would, sometimes I would, you know, get into so much trouble with drinking that I tried other things that basically had the same effect on me as drinking. I just did not want to be in my own skin. I was extremely uncomfortable in my own skin. So I at 30, I had, more circumstances where, you know, I really was starting to get serious about not wanting to be on the planet. I didn't see any light at the tunnel. I couldn't drink 24 hours a day and survive. You know, I couldn't keep a job or, my apartment or anything like that, doing that kind of thing. So I just really wanted to check out, terribly. And I had some pretty significant suicide attempts such that I was locked into a couple of psych wards. And I still at the time did not want to admit that there was any, you know, thing going on with alcohol or drugs. But that's what I was so depressed by that and just was doing so many more, you know, I guess shameful things. I couldn't stop by that point. You know, I remember thinking to myself that I would never drink alcohol and go to work. Never. And then I did. You know, I would never steal something from my work. And then I did. And one by one by one, all of those, you know, nevers, those yets that I had, you know, I guess just didn't think it was going to happen to me, that I was going to have any kind of problems. But I did, over and over again, such to the point that everything I had worked for, by the time I was 32, I'd burned to the ground. I had achieved an advanced degree, but no one would employ me. My employer at the time told me I reminded him of his 8-year-old daughter. You know, that if things didn't work out for me, that I was just going to take my ball and go home. And that's about exactly how I was acting, all the way up to the age of 35. And so let me bring my sister back into this picture. So at 30, when I was 30 years of age, my sister had 9 months sober here in Marin County. And she came all the way to the East Coast where I was in school. And she was on fire with AA and she was going to be bringing it to me. You know, and I just was like, oh my God, I was so overwhelmed. And at that time, again, I didn't want my little sister, my parents, judges, psychiatrists, anybody telling me what to do. You know, they said, you need to be in treatment. You need to go to a living center. You need to, you know, all kinds of things. I was like, no, you don't understand. I'm just depressed. I'll get over it. I'm going to get over it. So at some point, you can't run away from yourself anymore. You know, that everybody did for me what I couldn't do for myself. I lost my job. I burned my career to the ground, and my family all basically turned their backs on me because I had made my own bed. And what happened was, my dad came out to the East Coast and we drove, packed up all my stuff. You know, I'm 35 years old, completely disgraced. I drive back to the out here to, I was actually in the Gold Country in Calaveras County. And I started going to meetings there and, you know, with baseball cap, sitting in the back, arms folded, not taking any phone numbers from anybody, don't want anybody coming up on me, you know. And what had happened is my sister had come back right around that time before I came out here. And she said, she was 6 years sober by that time. And she said, this is what I know. And I thought, you know, I saw that girl drink. I know what her story is. And there's nothing different. Except she's been an Alcoholics Anonymous all this time. So maybe, she was the one who carried the message to me. I was having a hard time identifying. I was concentrating too much on the differences, not enough on the similarities. I wanted to think, you know, well, I'm not quite that. You know, I'm not the guy with the trench coat, with the bottle in the bag, in the gutter. I had nothing. But I still thought I had it all together, right? So anyway, I come out here and I start going to meetings. And before I know it, you know, not working any kind of a program at all, I managed to get a year sober. I just did what I was told to do and showed up to the meetings 3 times a week. There was nobody making me do it, but I had remembered getting, you know, I would refuse to get on my knees too. My sister was trying to get me to do that with a third step. And I was always like, no. But I remember thinking, you know, I can't seem to successfully get rid of myself. I don't have any better ideas. And it just dawned on me. Must have been a God thing. Why don't I just at least open my mind just a little bit to what these people are saying? I don't like it, but I'll try it. And wouldn't you know, little by little by little, I got a sponsor. She said, here's the meetings I go to, and this is what I want you to do. And I said, yeah, well, okay. I'm a pretty busy person, but yeah, sure. I'll try doing all that. And I had a hard time getting out of my head, you know, getting that drop from the head to my heart. and opening myself up to the concept of higher power. I really resisted that because of my religious upbringing, that I just was like, not doing that. And then there were all of you hugging me, telling me to keep coming back, actually caring about me, even if I didn't care about you back. And it was like, what's going on, you know? And the funny thing is I started to hear my faulty thinking, you guys sharing about it and how you changed that. And how, you know, I just started to identify, you know, speaker meetings like this one. I heard speaker after speaker, and I would look at this person and go, no. You know, there's a guy here who shares in his story, Tom K., or TK, if you know him, he tells about he came in with a cape, urine stained, urine soaked pants and a cape and really long wild hair, and he looks like Bing Crosby now. You know, he's kind of like this regular guy, and that's what I started to see, and I realized this is something's happening. You know, something's happening to me. And I don't know exactly what's going on, but all right, I guess I'll just keep trying to do this thing. And then the gift of this program is someone asked me to sponsor them. I was about a year and a half sober, and all of a sudden it occurred to me, that's why I'm supposed to be doing all this work, because I'm not supposed to be just getting all this for free here. I'm supposed to be giving this away. And if I don't know anything, and I'm not working anything, then I have nothing to give away. And so I really started taking the program a lot more seriously. By the age of 2 years sober, and that was just a beautiful experience for me. What a privilege, what an honor to have somebody ask you to sponsor them. You know, I was such a shitty sponsee, you know, and these people were taking time for me, you know, and all of a sudden I kind of got it when it got to be my turn. So at 2 years sober, I got involved in general service, and I started to learn from some really, really great people. By that time, I had gotten involved in a fellowship in Fresno, California. And I started to learn about just how magnificent this program is, that I'm important, but the group is most important. You know, that I check my ego at the door when I come here. And I want the hand of AA to be here for the next person, for my nephew, who now has 11 years. He was a little tiny kid. You know, his mom was a drunk driver till he was two. And then he got taken to a bunch of, you know, alky bulbs and all those kinds of things. And now he's a sober young man living in LA, you know, sponsoring other men. And, you know, just so kind of in a roundabout way, this fellowship here in Marin County, you know, I don't know, my sister, she possibly traveled through your meetings too. But her being sober, you know, I got to come back here at about 7 years sober, and I've been here ever since. So I've been back in the Marin Fellowship, where all of that came to me on the East Coast. It's one don't talking to another. That's all it is. And it's really amazing how, you know, I get to enjoy so many things if I just stay sober. Sometimes it's the same old thing day in and day out, but everything is possible. As long as I don't pick up another drink. I've not ever had another drunk driving. I've not lost another job. I've not had my family. I've been able to be a sister, a daughter, a friend. I've learned how to be a friend. I have a group of women I don't feel unsafe in any meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, because I know that each and every one of us connects at that level, at that core level. So it doesn't matter what my skin color is, or that I'm a 60-year-old woman or whatever. It's, you know, I can relate to each and every one of you through Alcoholics Anonymous. And thank my higher power for this program during a time like this in this world, because I don't know how people are coping out there. I really don't. I struggle to cope, you know. I'm still working. I did struggle with relationships. I'll just share that I did struggle with relationships in sobriety. And I was told that, you know, at least for the first year I was sober, to not get involved in a relationship, because, you know, that I tend to make those kind of people my higher power. You know, all of a sudden my higher power's not there anymore, because I give it to another person. It becomes about that other person. But I started having, you know, it started with my very first sponsor, learning how to trust just one person. And then I started to, you know, have that kind of fellowship grow up around me that I was so scared of. And I learned, especially being in it was a gay fellowship in Fresno, and it was hilarious. I didn't think if you didn't drink that you could dance or you could have fun or you could do anything. And it was just fun all the time. We were constantly having fun. Before sobriety, I lost my sense of humor. I really was a very depressed, very black kind of thinking person. The shoe was going to drop. The glass was half empty. You know, yeah, nobody looks out for you. That's how I was raised. And I got into this fellowship, and we were just having the best time. And it's just become that. My whole life has just become, you know, sometimes I belly laugh at the wrong time, like sometimes at work when people are talking about something that's maybe a little bit, you know, but it's like if we were talking about that here, we'd all be cracking up. So I got to be careful sometimes not to burst out laughing at inappropriate times. But I hear the humanity, you know, I mean, I hear the common, it's my identification with you. It's not that I'm laughing at you, I'm laughing with you because I've told a couple of the gory details of some of the, you know, my suicide attempts. And I had a young man come up and tell me one time that he tried to duct tape himself into a kayak. I think to drown himself or something. And I was like, we just were laughing so hard. I mean, that's not really funny. I mean, you know, when you think about it, I mean, suicide is not a funny thing. And when I felt that way, I wasn't laughing. But when I look back at it, I'm so grateful that I did not succeed at what I was trying to do. I was trying to destroy myself because I didn't know how to live. That more about alcoholism is my story. You know, I think that's most people's stories. You just get to a point with, you know, filled with pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization that you cannot recover from. You know, it's like you can't drink enough. You can't not drink enough. You know, I couldn't be sober and I couldn't stay loaded all the time. So I feel that Alcoholics Anonymous has given me so much, and you know, for it's free. You know, it's a free. We're all here helping each other. Like it never occurs to me, you know, that this is wasting my time. This is all done. It's money in the bank. Every time I listen to you, every time I pray for you, every time I hear at a meeting that somebody's either had a happiness, I can be happy for them, or if they have something going on that's tough, you know, thinking about you is a lot better than thinking about me. So I feel really blessed. I've had a great time sponsoring women. I have attended some great conferences, small ones like Sober and Free in San Jose. I did go to the Monterey Bay area roundup the year that Princess Diana, I think I was just a couple years sober when that accident happened with her, but I heard Dr. Paul and I heard Earl Hightower, who Earl H., and I still have one of his speaker tapes. That man's story, I don't know how many times I listened to that. I don't know if any of you guys here do speaker tapes. And it's kind of nice that you're taping this meeting because it's the stories. I have so many stories in my head. So that when that thought comes to me that, you know, what about me? Is it going to happen for me? I'm so grateful it happens for all of you, but is it going to happen for me? And you have told me so many times that it's going to, and how it happened for you that, you know, I believe it. And then it does. You know, I have been in a relationship now for 15 years with another human being who's also in the program, very helpful for me. And because we can speak a common language that I did have some trouble trying to be in a relationship with somebody early on in sobriety that said, you know, why do you have to sponsor people and take phone calls and go to these things? And it's like, you don't understand. I have to do this because I will die if I don't. I really believe that a day was going to come. I was going to drive a car and I wouldn't die, but that I possibly might cause someone else to die. And I believe with all my heart that even to this day, I cannot pick up a drink because my thinking, my perspective everything is gone the minute I have my first drink. Ride a motorcycle? Sure. You know, drive a car full of people? Sure. You know, just crazy, crazy. And I had all that I'm going to drink in my lifetime. About 15 years into sobriety, I got into another fellowship and I stopped using nicotine. So I've had no nicotine in my body for 10 years. That's amazing. I never thought I could do that. But these 12 steps work for in so many ways for so many people that I just want to put a plug in for that. I started to realize that I probably could qualify for almost every program that there is out there, which is not a bad thing. Because, turning it over, having a higher power in my life today, not feeling like I have to, go out with my fists, asking, being able to ask for help and ask for that second thought. My first thought still tends to be very selfish and often fear-based. It's just kind of a habit. But what I've been taught here is to wait and pause and wait for that second thought, which is usually an inspired thought, so that I'm not reacting to the world all the time. I'm actually much more right-sized than I used to be. And I'm not so afraid. I'm not so afraid of all of you. That's been such a gift because it's really lonely. I think we talk about it being a disease of loneliness. If you try to, take it all on your own shoulders, it's just too much. And I was breaking down under that, trying not to take all that on. So, I can't say enough about Alcoholics Anonymous. The whole reason I ended up out here in West Marin was just from a service call. I was in general service. Somebody said, "Hey, do you want to go out and do a group inventory at a meeting?" And I said, "Sure." And like you do. And I came out here and I met the person that I'm going to spend the rest of my life with. I mean, that was weird. It was just like the weirdest thing, but that's what happened. And so I don't say no to Alcoholics Anonymous. I hope, if I haven't shared anything that resonates with you, I know you'll all go to another meeting, and eventually, you hear what you need to hear. And I just want to just share that I'm extremely grateful to still be sober, especially in this time in the world. And I appreciate you asking me to share, and I realize I'm ending a little bit early, but thank you. That's all I got to say.